Hi, this is Brock.
This is Genevieve.
And this is Leslie. Welcome to Las Vegas Weekly's Second Helping Podcast. Thanks for coming along with us on this delicious ride across Las Vegas's food and restaurant landscape. You can listen to Second Helping every month at Las Vegas Weekly's YouTube page, at Apple Podcasts, and at lasvegasweekly.com/podcasts.
We're supposed to be talking about cooking on this episode of Second Helping, but I think that we don't really know how we feel about cooking. That might be the problem here. We don't know how to start this episode because, I don't know, I think I'm a pretty good cook, but I also think that I'm terrible sometimes. I struggle with it. What about you, Leslie?
I am not a good cook. I will be the first to admit that. I pretty much try to keep things really low-key at home because we go out to eat so often for work. So, yeah.
So you don't go to eat at a great restaurant and then get home and want to get inspired to try to cook something that's elaborate or fancy?
I don't think I've ever been at a restaurant and thought, I could recreate this at home. Like, that is literally never crossed my mind. I'm usually in such awe, and I have such, like, respect for what chefs do that, I would never just try. I would just fail immensely, and so I don't even attempt it, but...
Well, you don't have anyone at home to cook for necessarily,
oh, wow,
do you?
Put me on blast. I have,
I'm just saying.
I have roommates, Brock Radke, and a cat.
That counts? What's your cat's favorite thing that you cook?
Oh, my God. my cat probably would hate my cooking, too. No, to be fair, I started cooking for myself probably in college. I don't have any, like, cool, interesting story of cooking for myself when I was younger, but I started cooking vegetarian food in college, just, like, throw stuff together and stir fries and such became, like, my go-to. And to this day, I don't really cook a lot of meat at home because that was just kind of instilled in me then. I was vegetarian at the time. And it's my way of, like, balancing, like, health and being, you know, healthier at home so that I can pig out at work.
That's actually an important thing when you do what we do and go out to eat all the time. I definitely stay away from richer foods when I'm grocery shopping. Genevieve, you're a mom.
I am.
So you have to be a good cook.
I do. I mean, I'm not a good cook. I come from a family of excellent cooks, and I feel like I was adopted, maybe? I'm not sure. I actually have no creativity when it comes to cooking. Because I have a child, and I have to feed him and keep him alive, I do Blue Apron. And without that, I think I would be completely lost. I don't riff on recipes. I pretty much read it and do it exactly the way it's supposed to be. I like to bake, and that's probably why, because baking is very exact. I like that. I like following the rules. I'm not a cook who throws things together. Like, I can never look at my fridge and say, oh, I have A, B, C, D. I'm going to make this. That has never happened to me, ever. I have to look up a recipe all the time.
Is Blue Apron as convenient as people say that it is?
Yes. It's amazing. It really is.
I should try it. Yes. Now we're all of a sudden we're a podcast doing a Blue Apron commercial.
I was
without
just
a Blue
say,
Apron sponsorship.
We should absolutely have them sponsoring
Hello, Blue
us.
Apron. Hello. Where are you when we need you?
I do have to say, I went camping with Genevieve about a month ago, and she did make a really good sandwich.
I can do sandwiches.
Yeah, it was great. It definitely helped. You know,
I don't know if that counts as cooking, but I love sandwiches too. So we are going to have some different chefs, I suppose, guest chefs and non-chefs contributing to this episode of Second Helping. Leslie, you made a new friend.
Yeah, I did things a little bit different for this episode. I thought it would be cool to interview someone who isn't, like, quote-unquote, a chef by trade. So, you know, Vegas obviously is home to so many different shows. One of my favorite shows is Opium. If you haven't heard of it, where have you been? It's a hilariously raunchy, weird space odyssey put on by Spiegelworld at the Cosmopolitan, Australian comedian Asher Trelevin, who plays Captain Cunton in the show, is an unlikely chef and one of the most interesting Las Vegans to follow on Instagram. On top of getting behind-the-scenes snippets of the show, he's always cooking up a storm, showcasing his lavish meals and baked goods on his Insta stories. Lucky for us, Asher was kind enough to show me how to make homemade gnocchi from scratch. But before we hit the kitchen, we headed to the international marketplace on Decatur for some necessary ingredients.
How did you hear about this place?
I just do the research.
Uh-huh.
Always sort of like, I'm always looking for this kind of stuff, like all of this kind of like legit straight from Italy,
mm-hmm.
preserves and stuff are just amazing. And all the pasta is like phenomenal.
Right.
So the thing that I'm doing today is we're going to have really simple potato gnocchi with tomato and butter sauce. So it's like the easiest thing in the world.
Okay.
Like it's literally like a foolproof thing to make.
I'm excited. I made ravioli from a frozen bag last night, so this will be an improvement for sure.
So okay. Basically, like all we're getting today is canned tomatoes. For a lot of Italian sauces, you want to use plum tomatoes because they're less juicy.
Okay.
So they're like drier.
Okay.
So they're better for sauce. And then it's like crazy game and like the British section, just like chutneys and
oh wow,
baked beans
and you just were in London. Are you a fan of the cuisine there?
I am. It's sort of a bit similar to Australia. Like it's sort of same but different,
right?
But all of that stuff is real comfort food stuff, so it's for people who like want a taste of home,
right?
Like I like all of the weird frozen animals, like
deckhead,
ducks, rabbits, like weird black chickens. I love cooking rabbit. And I've got heaps of rabbits.
Oh wow!
So I cook rabbit a lot.
Okay.
And then like fancy Asian stuff, and a pretty good cheese counter.
And so you're from Australia.
Yeah.
Did you grow up then eating a lot of like rabbit and game or?
No. I grew up eating like meat and two veg, like really simple, really just like. I just whispered chemistry. Like very simple, like can't be fucked, like make easy food. My mom, I was she was a single mom, and so when I turned about like 16 or 15, mm-hmm. I sort of took over cooking for the family.
Okay.
And wanted to be a cook, like went to like a technical college to learn how to cook, and then got a job in a pastry shop, and I was like, yes, this is it. And then got fired.
Oh no.
Because I wasn't strong enough to lift up the pie trays and like cried into a flan.
Oh no.
And so then I worked as a line cook and then stopped doing that because it was like the hardest, worst job in the world. It was so difficult.
Really?
And then ran away to join the circus, like,
wow.
as you do.
In this next clip, Asher shows me how to make gnocchi, and truth be told, it actually is easier than it looks.
Okay, so what am I looking at right now?
So they're a gnocchi that I made last night, which are just potato and flour made with, like, boiling potatoes, like really simple Idaho russet potatoes. And they'll go in right at the end. They, like, take no time to cook.
Okay.
And then we'll make this tomato butter sauce, which will take about 40 minutes or so. And, like, literally, it's, like, you chop an onion in half. You put it in with two tins of tomato and some butter, and that's it.
That's it.
Like it is,
and just let it simmer?
Yeah. It is the simplest and, like, the best. It's, like, one of my favorite things.
Nice. Where did you learn this?
This is a Marcella Hazan recipe, who is, like, my fucking, the god of Italian cooking. She's a fucking genius.
Awesome. And how long did the gnocchi take to make?
Not too long. Like, you boil the potatoes and then you mix in enough flour to kind of create
a dough, then you just roll it out and you just sort of just go bop, 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 cut them into little pieces and then just like push them off the tines of a fork to give them that sort of...
Right.
This is something that sort of like always weirded me out about this recipe, is that you wash the brine off the tomatoes and then you chop them up.
And of course, I couldn't have a comedian on the show without asking him how he went from burgeoning pastry chef to runaway circus performer.
Do you find yourself cooking for the cast?
I do. I definitely had a period where I was like baking cakes, because I do a lot of baking as well.
Mm-hmm.
Baking cakes for them all the time. And then sort of baking for myself a bit and just getting like genuinely mum of fat. So I had to sort of. Like,
genuinely what?
Like,
sorry.
Mum of fat. Fuck. And I had to like just back it off. I was like, you are just cooking all of these meals and these cakes for like, you know, fuck, like they're meant for like 4 to 6 people, and then you're just like chowing down. And
is that just butter?
Yeah.
Where did you get this giant slab of
Amish
butter?
It's an Amish roll of butter.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah,
that's beautiful.
That's literally it. It is half an onion that gets discarded at the end. It is 2 cans of tomatoes drained and rinsed and chopped up.
Wow. And then you just sit around and wait.
Yeah, exactly.
You've been with opium since the beginning. So is it just over a year, right? A year and a half?
A year and a half now.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry.
No, go for it.
yeah, from the beginning, which has been like a phenomenal journey to be part of, like, to be here in Vegas and working on a show and having like being able to have like real creative input, because everyone in the show is like really experienced and really creative and they've made a lot of work, so being able to contribute and feel like that show is like part of, like, you're part of that show is like thing.
Yeah. Yeah, and you were telling me before you were on the comedy circuit in Australia for 12 years.
Yeah, I worked as a stand-up for about 8 years. And then before that, I was sort of trying to be a circus performer and worked a lot as a street performer. And then it kind of like, I sort of jumped from thing to thing. I sort of like wasn't that great a street performer, and then I did stand-up and almost became a famous stand-up, but then didn't. And then got back into cabaret, which was great. And then that sort of all ended. And then me and my ex-wife, who I work with in the show Gypsy, we were working on a couple of characters called Peter and Bambi, who are like crazy redneck nutcase magicians who just like bicker and fight and do big illusions. And we divorced, and then we started working on that show the next day.
Oh my gosh.
And then we did two shows, When Love Becomes Magic and The Magic Inside, and the guys from Spiegelworld saw When Love Becomes Magic at the Edinburgh Fringe, and I met them after the show, and they were like, oh, we're doing this thing in Vegas, you want to be part of it? And I was like, yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely, let's do the thing in Vegas, it's definitely going to happen. Like, I was absolutely did not think for a second that it would happen. And then we met with Ross Mollison a couple of weeks later, and he was like, well, we're doing this, you want in? And Gypsy and I was like, yes, absolutely. And then we've been sort of here ever since. This is the first time I've had like a kitchen that I could like build on. I've always, like, the place that I lived in London had a great kitchen, and that was like, it's just been a thing for me forever. Like, I started cooking when I was 8 and just loved it. Mm-hmm. And so I cook as much as I can all the time. And then I guess in the last sort of few years I just got super into it.
Yeah.
I would get up in the morning and like spend hours cooking, you know, which is just my jam.
Right.
You know? It's hard when you're on the road. When you're on the road and you're touring, you're like, you're just trying to make do in shitty little towns and, you know, like making food in your kettle or something like that in your hotel room. But being settled is great. Like, I love the fact that I can just, like, I can buy stuff. Like, I haven't been in one place for, like,
15 years, you know, like I've got plants. I've got house plants. So, yeah, I love being in one place. It's great. And Vegas is really nice, except for right now in the summer when it's like insanely hot.
And your social media, so you use social media, your Instagram profile, to kind of show the world what you're cooking.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I love. I think that's really interesting fun.
Yeah.
Why, like, what compelled you to do that?
I just like it. I think, like, cooking is just a delightful thing. Like, people love good food. It's just, like, a universally delightful thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and... Yeah, it's just like a, and then, you know, partially it's a showing off thing. Just like, hey, look what I did. I'm doing this thing good. Check me out. Have a look at me. I think it's a thing that just makes people happy.
Could you ever see yourself combining comedy and performing? Like, would you want a cooking show?
Yeah, I would love a cooking show. I'd love to be like a traveling cooking person. That'd be marvelous. It'd be a great job. I'd fucking love that.
Nice.
So if you're listening and you're looking for it, I'm here. I'm ready.
Hire him.
Asher seems like he's really comfortable in his own kitchen, and that makes me a little bit jealous. I'm more neurotic when I'm making anything in my kitchen. Like I said, I'm not very good at following recipes, and also I feel like my cooking can never live up to my own expectations because I've eaten at so many great restaurants around town. I kind of hold myself to a higher standard, which is probably ridiculous. But one thing that I do love to make at home, and I think I do it pretty well, is pasta, because it's a little more simple and there's a lot of different ways you can go. It's also one of my favorite things to eat, and when I get a serious craving, I go to Chef Mark's Trattoria. It's on the corner of Durango and Sahara near the Lakes neighborhood, so it's pretty close to home for me. And I've been eating at Chef Mark Scritzi's restaurants since he first came to Las Vegas almost 20 years ago now. His food is inspired by his family's heritage, and he actually visits a different region of Italy every year to eat and learn and come up with new ideas for dishes to serve his regulars. And I'm one of those regulars. Chef Mark was kind enough to allow me into his busy kitchen so I could pick his brain and get some pasta tips.
The color of the pasta is very important. You don't get that unless you go to get the right eggs.
Right.
Those are Chidori eggs, where we get our chicken from Chidori Farm. We also get the Japanese egg. You see the color there? That's from the yolk. This is spinach, veal, but it was cooked in milk, and it's a little different because it has to emulate the leftover meat that the Italians would repurpose into ravioli. That's why it's like that. And so it's going to be with a pistachio cream sauce. Quite different, quite Mount Etna-ish from Northern Sicily, and then when you go down South Sicily, you get the beautiful arancina from Palermo, and you get dishes like what we're doing tonight, the Norma, which is fresh bucatini with eggplant cooked in tomato sauce until it becomes all like very soft, and then you grate the ricotta salata all over the top.
Do you do any dishes here with dry pasta, or is everything fresh?
We do only very little with dry pasta. The ditalini for the pasta vajol, it's dry pasta at this time. And I just bought a case of peccati because I was making my own peccati, but the dye I have has lines in it, and I don't like that. I want it to be smooth, so I bought something from Italy that I really like, and when I get the right dye, I'll be back to making mine. Otherwise, you have to roll each one of them like you do a cannoli on a dal, you know, and then you kind of seal it. But that would take forever.
So somebody like me who has never made fresh pasta, it can be a little bit intimidating, even though we have access to relatively affordable machines now that we can do stuff like this at home.
The tabletop machine.
It's really not that complicated, right? No.
The thing is, to get the dough right, I would say you have to use, and I have a recipe for that as far as weight goes. You've got to go by weight, not by a measuring cup. So I would go whatever it is in dry flour you're going to use, you have to use 50% wet. And that's the recipe. So we like to use 80, 90% egg yolk to egg, and then any water in this particular flour. So just there's enough water in egg whites. This is egg yolk, mostly 90% egg yolk over here. And good eggs, like golden eggs. Eggs that have a nice color in the inside. Now you see it's getting right there. silky smooth. When you eat it, it's like just melts in your mouth.
So I need to go get a scale if I'm going to become a pasta expert. Real.
On Amazon, $40, that scale's fantastic. Now we have a big one in the bag.
What's some of the more popular pasta dishes on the menu since you've been over here at this location?
Well, because when I get back from Italy, people are very excited about the recipes I picked up on my journey. Those are the big sellers. But right now we're doing peccati with the wild duck from Venice that I did last year's trip. That's very popular. And the way we do the wild boar bolognese now, you get such a depth of flavor in that sauce. We're doing that with homemade rigatoni. Amazing. So people are they talk about it online. We get a lot of reviews.
We were talking before about finishing pasta and the sauce and stuff like that. Yeah. We used to always have big spaghetti dinners at home and just throw like some dry, cook the spaghetti, strain it, just pull it out, throw it on the plate, and then drown it with sauce. Sauce, probably.
I'll tell you what you could do to really...
That's just like the way that Americans are growing up.
No, to elevate your pasta at home, and you're using dry pasta, which is great, and you have your sauce, which is your own recipe from your family or whatever. So whatever you're doing, you need to dress the pasta. So when the pasta comes out of water into the strainer or the colander, now you have a little water that's saved from the pasta. It's always save water. I don't care. Make it in a cup, coffee cup. You're going to use it somewhere. Your sauce might be too thick. Add a little pasta water. You need that. That's your stock. But you also have to leave a little water in the pan. Put the pasta back in there. And now you add, if it's a red sauce, whatever, add a little tablespoon of butter and a little salt and pepper and grated cheese that you're using later and mix it into your pasta. Now you can put a little sauce in there and mix it, and you have your seasoned pasta. You dressed your pasta. Then you go to the table, you can put your sauce on, but it's already dressed. You don't have to load it with all your sauce if you don't want to. Let the people get how they want it at the table if they want to do it themselves. But even if you're doing it, dress your pasta right from the water. No rinsing, of course, you know that.
And so many pasta styles and like shapes, they're made to get coated in sauce, and they have little nooks and crevices to retain the things that you're
like this
putting
one's
on
doing,
it.
He's doing now the annulati. This is going to be where that little, where when you fold it and grab it, it's got a bottom base, but then that little area is going to hold sauce as almost like a cup. Look. See the side right here?
Yeah, nice little perfect.
See that? So that when you bite this and eat this, there's going to be sauce hiding in there. And that's a beautiful annulati, yeah. Now, we did that earlier with roasted butternut squash just in season. And we'll do a brown butter sage sauce. We have that tonight as well. We have a lot of pasta, different pastas from all over. That's more what I learned in Parma, Italy, the one with the roasted butternut squash. They have a little different recipe than people learned here. And we do it like that.
Pasta is one of those foods that's really, to me, it's all about texture. And maybe people don't think about texture as much when they're eating, how big of a role that plays and enjoying every bite.
Look at the difference in gnocchi and arrichetta. One's chewy and dense, and then one is a pillow. So, yeah, texture means a lot with pasta, and it depends on how heavy or light your sauces are and what you want, how you enjoy, you know, what you like. I like fresh pasta. That's all we make here. And, you know, there's no really dense, hard al dente fresh pasta. The bucatini, the rigatoni sometimes can be like that. But what we look for is the perfect elasticity to it. How it opens and, you know, how you feel in your mouth. The elastic fresh pasta is what we look for.
You've probably had different customers come in over the years who maybe haven't had a lot of fresh pasta. Maybe these days people have had it more.
Yeah.
But when someone comes in and they're just used to making spaghetti at home or whatever out of the package, and then they have fresh pasta, it's a little bit of a learning curve almost because the texture is so different, right?
Yes. They could complain that it's not al dente like they had at home, like chewy or whatever. But once they realize, you know, that we know what we're doing. We've been doing this a long time, and they have to trust you. Most of them fall in love with it right off the bat. A few people, like you're saying, that you get used to something in your mouth, that feeling is different. So difference sometimes isn't wrong. It's just different.
People in Las Vegas, do they think about Italian food and pasta differently than when you first got here? People order different? I don't want to say has the taste improved, but, you know, have local diners kind of become a little bit more educated about this kind of food since you've been here?
Yeah, I think, the cultures, too, growing here. There's different cultures growing. So the people that I originally had, they still like some of the original things. I'm still doing the Haringey pasta I did back then. You know, I've revised a few dishes, but I'm always changing and updating and learning. Going to Italy teaches me so much every year, and they know that we're more authentic than your mom and pops, and you got to respect all levels of Italian food. But I just like to elevate it and do a little bit more European style. So
yeah
their taste have. I think people have learned, just like they watching on social media, they see something really different that I'm doing, and they want to come and try it.
Do you have a favorite, just a personal favorite pasta dish that you love to cook, or that your wife loves, or that like a maybe, something that you do at home a lot?
You know, if I'm going to go to something really quick, it's an aglio with spinach or broccolini, like that kind of thing. But if I want to make something nice, it's either a carbonara or a matriciana, because we make this pancetta, and I love the way it crisps up. And then that's our own pancetta. We age it with cracked pepper after the aromatics are done with it, curing it. You know, it's really nice.
What's up?
Bucatini with a matriciana, and that's the secret to a matriciana. You have to have good bay leaves that we get from Diane's Herbs, and then we add the red wine vinegar and the tomatoes, and it just comes out so beautiful.
It's what the pork is the secret to that sauce, right?
Yeah, you got to crisp it up really well. Yeah.
That seems like that's the chef's favorite dish. Matriciana or cacio e pepe?
Yeah, cacio e pepe is the cheese one. We make baskets for that. We serve it in a cheese basket. Mm-hmm. A lot of people that like cheese and mac and cheese will go for that one. It's 20 up 5 now, 20 minutes.
That matriciana he mentions is my next pasta mission. I'm going to make that at home really soon. But I'm also going back to Chef Mark's to try some of those dishes he's created, inspired by his most recent trip to Italy just last month. He's doing a duck ragu with pecorino pasta and an octopus tagliatelle in a sauce with olives, tomatoes, and zucchini. That sounds really good.
Did he give you some other cooking tips?
Yes, definitely. He talked about how important it is to season at every step when you're cooking to really build those layers of flavor that you want in any kind of dish. So even if you're just browning garlic in olive oil to get a sauce started, you definitely want to hit it with salt and pepper at least. And one of his favorite secrets is to use just a splash of red wine vinegar in your red sauce, or white wine vinegar in any white or lighter sauces, because it's such a powerful and natural flavor enhancer that balances everything out. But you have to use just a touch. Just give it a little vinegar kiss. That's it.
That's a good tip. So if cooking is as challenging for you as it is for me, then the next best thing to do is fake your way through it. This is where the cheese board classes at Cured & Way, a hidden gem tucked in an office business park on Valley View Boulevard, comes in handy. In addition to breakfast and lunch offerings, Cured & Way has a wonderful cheese selection overseen by Diana Breyer, Las Vegas' first and only mega monger. Diana is one out of 45 American Cheese Society certified cheese sensory evaluators, a very difficult certification to achieve. In layman's terms, this means she really knows her cheese. Along with Cured & Way chef Emily Brubaker, attendees will get to put together an amazing cheese board that's sure to be a hit at your next cocktail party, and all this without turning on your stove. Chef Emily explains how the class works, which takes place once a month and features different themes. The class she mentions here is from September. October's theme is melting cheeses, fondue, and beer, and it's taking place on Wednesday, October 16. Get your tickets early as seats sell out fast, and they limit the class to about 20 people. So it's very intimate and a very fun class to take.
So here at Cured & Way, we're offering classes once a month. It's the last Wednesday of the month. And what we're doing is every month is different. So this month we're doing East meets West. So we're doing all the artisanal East Coast cheesemakers paired with West Coast wine, so coming from Washington, Oregon, and California. And so we are just kind of showcasing all these beautiful cheeses that are very small produced. So like we sell here with MGP or with Cured & Way, and we're pairing them with some wonderful wines from Epic, which is a wine distributor. The classes are small format. They're about 20 people. We give you a slate board. We teach you about each cheese in depth of where they're coming from, what kind of animal they're coming from, what kind of milks are used. So it could be a mixed milk or a single variety. We explain the flavors. We explain the accoutrements, so what goes with it to make a really nice board. So if we're doing a blue, we like to always suggest doing chocolate with blue, which is a little out there because people don't really think blue cheese and chocolate. It is a perfect pairing. So we might introduce that and explain also to go towards honey or certain kinds of jams, depending on the flavors of the cheeses. And then we'll have the West Coast wines that we think match the cheeses pretty well.
Very cool.
So as you mentioned, making a cheese board at home, for me, it's one of my favorite things to do is to make a cheese plate. And I usually look for a hard cheese, so something like a Parmesan, a Mimolette, very aged cheese, so you get that nice dry cheese. I look for something. And then on the very other end of that, I look for a very soft cheese, so a triple creme or a brie. And that's my two spectrums. And then in between, I usually throw a blue and then something funky. So funky could be like Epoisse, which is like a French stinky, washed rind, gooey cheese that's like really intense. But with the others, it might just be that kind of funk one, or you could get something that's like very goaty or very sheepy or very animal flavored. Or even for me, like a funky one would be like a lemon Stilton. So, which is like a dry blue, but it's got the lemon in it. So it's fruity and sweet and really nice. So you can have a little bit of your hard, your soft, your blue, and then something to just kind of break it all up. And then usually on a cheese board, I like to put either a jam or like a honey to kind of just complement it a little bit. And then nuts or pickles. So you're not just kind of like, you have a crunch or like a salty or vinegar or briny flavor with it. And then fresh fruit is always a perfect pair with cheese, be it apples or pears or fresh berries. Persimmon goes great with cheese. Like, you can definitely be seasonal. I've learned that pineapple actually can go very well with certain kinds of cheese, where it just brings out the nuttiness and then also like that like beautiful tropical kind of flavors that you would never think to have in cheese. And then always some kind of cracker. And I don't really go towards your plain old crackers. I like a bread cracker or a rye cracker, an olive oil cracker, because you get a better crunch, a nice crumb, and it really holds up to the cheese rather than like being just kind of a pasty flour vessel.
Do you recommend like a baguette or?
I think, yeah, fresh baguette is great because especially with your soft cheeses, you can just spread it on there, build a little sandwich. Mm-hmm. I like putting charcuterie with mine, usually like a dried salami of some kind. Like, I like our artisanal salami. So anything out of like Smoking Goose, which is in Colorado, or Elevations, or I mean, prosciutto always works.
So how many different types of cheeses would you recommend if you were just throwing a small party at home?
If you're doing a small party, I definitely go minimum of four. But you don't want to go too over the top by doing like 10, because that's just too many varieties and it might just completely contradict each other. So four is a great start. And then you can add in, like, if you wanted to add in something kind of like an Alpine cheese, so like a Gruyere or an Emmentaler or something like that, that's a little bit more kind of bitter, a little less sweet, a little less creamy. That's really fun to add onto one of these boards that might be covered in like really creamy cheeses.
Okay, that sounds good.
Yeah.
Do you have any recommendations on how, so if somebody's not into really stinky cheese, like how would you introduce your palate to that?
There are so many different kinds of stinky cheeses, which is really fun because the smell of the cheese is never what it tastes like. So Epoisse is one of those where it's like you smell it and you just don't want to eat it. But when you eat it, that funk is really light and it's more of a creamy butteriness that you get from it than this really pungent smell. So the smell's there. You still get a little funk, but I tell people to kind of start light, try to go with a cheese that's got a washed rind because those are usually your funkier ones. So Cowgirl Creamery has a really nice one called Red Hawk that has a little bit of a pungent smell. But when you eat it, it's very light, and the more it breathes and is unwrapped, the less that smell is there. So at least that can slowly get your palate into a funky cheese.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And all these are available here.
Yep, we sell all of these. At MGP, we have over 150 varieties of cheese always on hand, and we are always willing to research, look into, bring in specialty cheeses for anybody. Oh, and we also do cheese boards. So if you wanted to have a party of, let's say, 30 people, we have a cheese professional. We call her Mega Monger. Her name is Diana. And if you want to see her on Instagram, she is the Wonder Woman of cheese. She can curate a board specialty for you. So you tell her what flavors you like. You like a sweet board. You want a savory board. You're doing an Italian night. Diana can make a board specially for your party. And we do boards as small as 2 people all the way up to hundreds of people.
This episode of Las Vegas Weekly's Second Helping Podcast is also brought to you by Jack Daniels. I recently spent some time in the Alchemy Room at Breakthrough Beverage Las Vegas with Brown-Forman whiskey specialist Jennifer Holly, a.k.a. my new best friend. And she's created some fantastic Halloween cocktail recipes using Jack Daniels Tennessee Fire and Tennessee Honey. They're perfect for your holiday party. They both have a delicious balance of sweet and spicy. And you can get these recipes and find out how to make them at LasVegasWeekly.com and LasVegasMagazine.com. Okay, it's that time again. Let's close out this October episode with the best things that we ate this month. Congratulations, Genevieve. You get to go first. What was your best bite?
So Tao at the Venetian recently introduced an exclusive omakase tasting experience, which I had the opportunity to try out. It was definitely an experience with some of the best sashimi and nigiri I'd ever had. Every bite was perfect, from the grilled king crab with A5 Wagyu beef to the tuna topped with caviar and gold flakes. Super, super decadent and absolutely just memorable. The dinner is $150 per person with an optional sake pairing. It's only offered once a month, and seating is extremely limited. I think it's only 8 people per seating, and there's 2 seatings per month. It's definitely worth checking out, and I can't think of a better dinner I've had this month.
I love Tao. I think that place, the food has always been so good there, and I know that people think of it as the nightclub, maybe, or just a big party spot in Vegas and New York and everywhere else it is, and maybe the food gets overlooked sometimes, but it's so good.
I absolutely agree. It's everything I've ever had there has been so good. What about you? What's the best thing you ate?
Well, I finally made it to Jones and Spring Mountain to check out EDO Tapas, which is celebrating its first anniversary this month. And now I can't stop thinking about the little tiny wafer-like sandwich they call the bikini, which is like this miniature crispy grilled cheese with sobrasada, but it's like a paste. It's like a meat paste. It's not like a slice. I mean, it's so small. I don't know. It's so rich. I don't know how they get all of that flavor into this tiny, tiny morsel of food. But I guess it's not that surprising because these are the same guys behind the great Bocaria Street food truck, and they really know their sandwiches, no matter what size, apparently. Leslie, it's your turn.
Uh-oh. I ate a million things this September, and I tried to narrow it down, but I'm just going to kind of try to go through a few of them because everything was so good. So I finally got to stop into La Strega by Gina Marinelli, and I first just have to say that I love that there are so many feminine touches throughout the restaurant. It has such a different feel. The cocktails are named after women from history or female icons. So that was just, you know, a little side note. And I am not a huge pizza person, but their spicy pig really blew me away. It has sobrasada, smoked mozzarella, Calabrian chilies, I don't know how to say that word, and scallions, and it's got a kick, but not overly so. And then I was obsessed with the dough. As we were kind of discussing this earlier, and I'm from Chicago originally, and I love a thicker crust that's like a little chewy and sturdy and holds up to all the toppings. So I really loved that. What else? Tres Cazuelas I went to, which was Jim Begley wrote about it in a few Las Vegas Weeklies ago. And so he just sold me on it, and I had to go check it out for myself. It's this like family style Spanish and Latin American tapas place. But when you go there, you feel like you are in someone's home, and it's totally on European time. you get sat with other people and, like, they're kind of just, like, passing around wine. And it just, it really is a completely otherworldly experience. I was having so much fun that I didn't really write stuff down. But my favorite things that I remember were the pork belly skewers with peaches, the chimichurri potatoes, and the Iberico dates. But I'm definitely going back to try more stuff.
That's the sign of a good place when you're having too much fun and right? enjoying yourself, that you forget to take notes or pictures or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you were saying that you were kind of surprised by that. Like, you didn't know what to expect going in there, and then it was this really different experience and more of a social experience. Right.
Well, I definitely think people need to, like, go in knowing that, like, the service is a little bit slower, and, like, I want to, you know, keep reiterating, it's European time, and it's meant, like, to enjoy everything and to drink wine and to kind of, like, loosen up maybe before you go out, you know, to a club or go out to a show. So it's definitely a completely different, very, like, not American, not, like, traditional, what we're used to feel. But once you know that and once you're prepared, it's awesome. It's such a cool experience. And the owner puts so much love into everything. And the food is awesome. So, yeah.
And it's right next door to the Sand Dollar.
It is. Which I was thinking, I mean, what a great date night, because Tres Cazuelas closes at 9, and then you just roll over to the Sand Dollar, and it's, like, perfect.
That's a good one. I think you can have a few more, maybe.
Okay. yeah, all right. So other places I ate at that were awesome. I tried out Ombra at the MGM, which replaced Fiamma, and really, everything was good. I'm not a big chicken parm person, but their chicken parm was awesome. And I would say, no matter what you do, save room for the vanilla cake with Italian meringue, and then save it again and eat it for breakfast with coffee in the morning. It's awesome. I did that. Highly recommend it. And Rose Rabbit Lye just rolled out this, like, Sunday supper thing. It's dinner and a show, and their truffled potato gnocchi is insane. It's so good. It's like, you know, it's bad for you. And I just could not stop eating it. I ate the whole plate by myself. So that was awesome.
Clearly you didn't do any cooking.
I'm telling you, I don't
cook.
You went
to every restaurant in Las Vegas.
No Blue Apron for Lester.
Yeah,
this
and this is why, like, I sustain on, like, veggies and egg whites at home, because you can't eat like that and, you know, live otherwise.
Or you can live really well.
Right.
It's a tough life. That's all the second helping you're going to get this month. Hopefully you like what you heard, even if you don't want us to cook for you anytime soon. We have to thank Asher Trelevin, Mark Skritzy, and Emily Brubaker for letting us into their kitchens for this episode. And more special thanks to Sonia Barcelona for lending her song Violent Water to our show. You can listen to her new album Bitter Melon and find more music at artofsonia.com. Catch up on our past episodes at lasvegasweekly.com/podcasts. And please come back next month for more Second Helpings.